Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. As you can tell, Steve and Justin are convinced that their new My 401k program could be a good solution for you, lending a hand to investors who need help making choices within their employer's program. My 401k ranks your current 401k investment options within your employer's specific plan based on current trends and long-term performance. Then it builds a portfolio that corresponds to your personal risk tolerance. Take a look at it. Click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com and then My 401k. End of commercial. And now today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of Invest Talk. It is October 27th. And of course, I welcome you always to Invest Talk. We do this Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. on the West Coast. We try to work with you. We try to help make better choices. We all want to make better choices in investing and avoid costly mistakes. We all want to do that. If you're investing, if you're deciding, you're making decisions, okay? And many times the decision is to do nothing, by the way. It's not always I have to make a decision to buy or sell something. You can just do nothing, too. Nothing. And that is a decision. I just worry that people sometimes do nothing because they just don't think about it. That's not a decision, okay? You got to be diligent. You know, you have to, and that doesn't mean you're watching it every second of every day. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about understanding the economy, understand what the Federal Reserve is doing, what other countries are doing in relationship to our country, economically speaking. What direction is the market generally overvalued or undervalued? What is working better? That is some sectors working better than others? And not that you should jump into them, but you should understand how it works and the relationship, that kind of thing. On and on and on and on. And we're going to talk about a lot of this in our upcoming wealth conference, by the way. It's Saturday morning wealth conference. We're going to talk about why you might consider moving from value stocks to moving from growth stocks to value stocks. There have been many growth stocks that have done very, very well since our recession, end of our recession. Apple, Google, you name them. There's lots of them. And we're suggesting that run might be coming to a close and value might be coming more popular. We're also going to talk about the impact of global politics. Now, I'm not talking about we're going to get into politics. We're going to talk about the impact on our market by global politics. In my market commentary earlier this week, I wrote about a currency war. We all know there's a currency war. If you don't, then maybe you know it as another term called competitive devaluations. That's the nice, soft words to use. Competitive devaluations, not a currency war. It's pretty simple to understand. It's an effort by one country to devalue their own currency in relationship to another country's currency. Why do they do that? To gain an advantage in trade. The country that's devaluing their currency wants to increase their exports, thus boosting their economy. If their currency is worth less, their products are cheaper to other foreign countries with a currency that is more expensive than theirs or valued higher than theirs. Very simple. By the way, a currency war is very rare, by the way. It's not often that we've had this over the years, over the decades, and it's just rare. Now, how do you say, how can a country devalue its currency? If their currencies are traded against each other in the open market, how does a country, first of all, it's not as open as we all would like it to be, but in an open, how does a country devalue the currency? Well, one way is Japan did it for years and years and years, and they would buy American dollars and sell their Japanese yen to make their currency worth less. The central government would do that, central bank, Bank of Japan. You can also lower your interest rates. Lower your interest rates, which would, what do they call that? Quantitative easing, QE. So we lowered our interest rates here in the U.S. for years and years and years, right? to try to spark our economy. Well, how would that spark our economy? Well, make money easier to borrow. But how's that make our currency move up and down? Well, remember, if you're a country and you want your currency to be cheaper, well, you want to make it less attractive, lower the interest rates of your debt, then no one wants to buy your debt, and then it would make it, you know, make the value go down and down and down. Same. So it's an effort to just manipulate the value of your currency with the disguise that, no, I'm not manipulating my currency. That's not, no, I'm not doing it. What I'm doing is lowering my interest rate so my companies and borrowing costs would be cheaper to spark the economy here. And just because it has another add-on effect of lowering my currency, that really wasn't my effort when it really was. You don't necessarily believe what they say. You watch what they do. And that's true in any relationship. You ever notice that? People say things, but you really want to watch what they do. The same way with politicians and central bankers. What they say is meaningless. It's what they do. So that's how they could do it. Pretty interesting stuff, I think it is. And we're going to talk about this in our wealth conference. I hope you're going to be there. Does it work, devaluing your currency? Does it? It can't work if everybody's doing it, right? How can it work? And if it could work so well, how come our economies around the world aren't just growing like gangbusters? Not working so good. So that's why it doesn't work. Why are they taking forever to find that out? I don't know. So we're going to talk more about global marketplace and particularly how global politics can disrupt markets. Also how central bank policy can impact portfolios. And we're talking about next year, how they're going to impact your portfolio next year. We'll have compelling reasons why you should transition from growth to value stocks. We'll tell you why. We'll show you why. So join us, if you can, on our upcoming Saturday Morning Wealth Conference, How to Prosper in a Year of Change 2017. It's Saturday morning, 9 to noon, November 12th in San Jose. You can sign up online at investtalk.com. Now, do you have questions about growth versus value stocks? Maybe you'd like to know more about our conference format. Well, we can talk about that. Any money miners questions, whatever you want to talk about, as long as it's financial, we'll talk about it. Let's go to our 24-hour listen line. Let's get the Q&A portion of the program going. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Eric from Utah. I just had a question regarding when to buy the second half of like a stock positions. For example, I've got a half position in GBX, Greenbrier Railroad stock, and then a half position in Lockheed Martin. My GBX position is down a little bit, and my Lockheed Martin position is now in good shape after the recent, yesterday had a really nice run. Anyway, just trying to understand if there's like a rule of thumb for when to buy the second half of your position. If you wait for a certain percentage drop, or if it's going up, if you say, okay, here's the opportunity, it's turned around, it's heading in the right direction, now I'm going to put my other half position in. Anyway, if you have any thoughts on that, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Love the show. Bye.
Okay, when you put in a half position and you want to actually have a full position at some point, you have to decide the time that you bought the half position is where you want to buy your other half. Now, if you feel the company, you might be overpaying. If you feel that you're buying up because you just don't, it hasn't stopped running up and up and up and up, and you're missing out it, and you want to buy half a position because you're worried that you might be getting into it at a later date, then you decide, well, I want to buy the other half when it pulls back. If you're buying half a position because it looks like a bottom, but you're not quite sure, then you want to buy your other half position when it starts moving up. Okay, I'd like buying half positions when the stocks are starting to move back up, whether they're pulling down or coming from a bottom and moving up, or already at a bottom moving up, whether they're pulling up. I like to see them turn around a bit before I jump into them, because you never know if they're coming down where the bottom is. You see support if you're going to read a chart, but you got to make sure that support holds, and it doesn't always hold. It tends to hold, but doesn't always hold. And there's no really rule of thumb except your own that you write down when you buy your half position. The reason why I'm saying you write it down because you'll forget when and why you're going to buy your second half. You write down why you bought the stock. And if those things are still true and you bought half position and it pulls down to a place where you thought it could find support, you should have written that down and I'm going to buy the other half at this number. And if everything's the same, you buy it. So there's no really rule of thumb of when to buy. But you can help yourself out if you write down your reasons for buying the first half, buying it at all, and then write your reasons why you want to buy the second half at a certain point. You just gotta be consistent in your approach. Don't get emotional about it. See, what will happen is you get emotional about it. You see it pull down to where you said you were going to buy the other half, and then you don't do it because it went down. Well, then your thinking was wrong at the very beginning because you can't pull the trigger. Your emotions are driving your decisions, not you saying, oh, I'm going to buy this to here because it would be a much better buy at that point. Or I'm going to buy here. It's now broken out to new highs. I want to buy it as it keeps running up. You have to write that down and be consistent about the decision making. Glad you're with us today. Is there such thing as a risk score? Yes. It's an actual number assigned to help you measure your investment risk tolerance, your personal risk tolerance. You can also score a portfolio with a real number too. Use our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. 888-992-4278. Call and give me a question. I'd love to answer questions. As long as they're financial, I'm very happy to talk about it. The case against ETFs. The case against them. What's wrong with ETFs? The founder of Vanguard and his former chief investment officer said that they're not as safe as they seem. That's going to be the talking point, the main talking point. The founder of Vanguard, Bogle. You remember Bogle? Anyways, also I want to talk about why cash is no longer king. Cash is not king. I'm talking about the use of cash, by the way. 10-year treasury rise to the highest yield since June. Why are the yields going up? I mean, remember the Federal Reserve having to change rates. You got to remember, bonds in the United States don't trade in a vacuum. Values and yields change, go up and down, but it's not in a vacuum. Something else is going on. Remember, that's on. We got to understand all the pressures that push bonds up and down. And did you see Tesla's numbers? They made money. Second quarter in their history that they actually made money in quarter three. But really? But did they really? Did they? I think we should talk about Tesla. And I love Tesla, by the way. I love the concept of a new automobile company, going to be a big automobile company coming in, and it has a brand new technology, you know, with the electric cars, when the old car companies were, you know, give you these very inferior electric cars, and here comes along Tesla with super duper fancy looking cars that have great great distance abilities on their batteries and stuff. Totally blow out the old school car companies with their new thinking. I love that. I think that's great. It's called creative destruction. They're creating something new. But I'm not so sure that the valuations are right. So I want to talk about Tesla a little bit, if we can. I really do. Those are the talking points we're going to discuss, that I'm going to discuss. But, of course, you drive the program. So what do you want to talk about? I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you're listening to Invest Talk. Remember, we're not all about stocks and bonds. Do you have questions about life insurance, real estate, trust, wills? How much money should you have when you retire? Any money questions is welcome. 888-99-CHART.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on InvestTalk.
Hi, Steve. This is Lillian. I'm calling to find out, is this the right time to invest in AT&T, and Verizon. Thank you very much for your program. Appreciate it. Bye.
Well, both of them have pretty good pullbacks recently, AT&T and Verizon, for different reasons. AT&T recently, you know, announced it's going to buy Time Warner, or at least try to. That's going to have some hurdles to get through if that deal goes through. And they pull back. For instance, AT&T was close to, what, 42.5? Now it's at 36. And that took a couple of months to get down there, 36, 52. So the question is, should you buy it now? Well, what is your reason to buy? Now, I think your reason to buy these companies is that the dividend. And AT&T is 5.4%. Are they going to be able to maintain that dividend? Are they've been growing recently. Is that going to be able to maintain that? And how much of this AT&T buying Time Warner going to affect their bottom line? Will it affect their dividend? I doubt it. I think it won't. Verizon's dividend is 4.8. And their growth has slowed down of recent. And part of the reasons why they, AT&T and Verizon are the kind of companies you buy when they're cheap, when they look inexpensive. And if you look at Verizon, it's trading for $48. That's a 12 PE. The average year is 5-year PE is 10 to 22. So it's fairly inexpensive. If you look at AT&T, their PE is 13. Based on next year's earnings, it's going to be about 12. And its low, 5-year low, is 12 to 17 PE range. So both of them are good values for the price, I think. Now, do you buy them now? Well, if you buy them for the dividend, you might as well buy them now. I don't see any reason not to. Doesn't mean they won't continue to go down, but if you're a long-term investor, you want to buy them when they're cheap, and they look fairly cheap. I mean, they're not the cheapest in the world, and they've been a lot cheaper in their history. But I don't think they're going to go down that much more unless we move into a recession, and I don't see that on the horizon yet. So, yeah. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. The market was down today. The Dow was down 30. The NASDAQ was down 34, and the S&P down 6. More of the same movement for the market. Kind of just weak. Just weak. Nothing strong. Good days, bad days, good days, bad, kind of just staying where it is. Nothing to write home about, nothing to get excited about. Okay, so let's talk about the case for against ETFs, exchange-traded funds. You know, those are those funds you can buy and sell like stocks, but act like mutual funds. And the case against them, this is Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, talking about why he thinks that they're not the best. It mostly surrounds that he does not like that they're not all broad-based index funds. You think even the index funds that they are, that many of them are now very narrow, and that some of the ETFs are just buying a single asset like gold or whatever, and he thinks that's unwise. That's his biggest complaint, that people are not investing them. They're investing them. They're using them to trade. And he thinks that the companies that do that, that produce the ETFs for trading, is wrong. And of course, we talk about those leverage ETFs that I don't like, that you could buy and sell. And those are specifically designed for trading. And, it's not the best. I'm telling you, it's very difficult. Very difficult to try to guess what sector is going to move up or down. Now, I don't have a problem using ETFs to build a broad-based sector portfolio, but trying just to pick one sector to do well, and it's just very, very difficult to do that. Very, very difficult. So that's what the biggest complaint about them from Vogel. You remember, he likes the S&P 500, big, broad indexes. The broader, the better. Okay, just buy them and hold them. Don't try to trade them. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We are deep into earnings season. And have you been keeping any kind of track to how well or poorly earnings season has been? And I'll say this. Yeah, we're beating the expectations. But don't we always beat the expectations every quarter because they lower the expectations so much? So, yeah. And we've had some earnings surprises on the upside, but we've also had some earnings surprises on the downside. And the market is kind of reflecting both those, so that's why it's doing very little. It's also reflecting the worry about raising rates when the Fed meets in December. It's also worried about the election in, 12 days? Presidential election. The market's got a lot of things on its plate it's worried about, but it's not too worried, but it is somewhat worried, but not too worried. Isn't that funny? One of the things that I saw that's bullish is that there's quite a bit of cash on the sidelines. Quite a bit, and I'm talking about not just here in the U.S., globally, lots of cash. But there also was a lot of cash before the last two crashes as well, 2000, 2007. So, but that's a lot of ammunition. What this tells me is that that ammunition, unless we go into recession, that ammunition, cash, is going to be deployed in the market somewhere. And that's going to be bullish. But there might be some shaking out of the weak hands. We haven't seen that happen, this summer, really. We might have seen the low for the year. We might have seen it already. October kind of is known for its lows. Of course, we got a few trading days left. So we're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. That's how you can get through right now. I'm Steve Peasley. You're listening to Invest Talk. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast, Investment Resources that come straight from the desks of professional investors. Special watch lists created to give investors an idea of the type of investments the pros consider. The webinar archive provides access to various lessons about how to invest properly. It's all there for Invest Talk insiders and much more. Just click on the Invest Talk tab on investtalk.com to sign up. It's free. And now more Invest Talk. You're listening to Invest Talk for Thursday, October 27th. Does it seem there is more news every day to cause you to wonder about your retirement plan? Destructive investing distractions. That's next time. Have a question now for Steve? You can get through. 888-99-CHART is how to reach him from anywhere in the USA.
888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Lucy in San Jose. How you doing, Lucy?
I'm doing good. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
I have a question. So basically, I work for a small biotech, and they recently told us that they are going to roll out ESPP as a benefit. And I'm wondering, what are the considerations, I should have?
Okay,
How should I buy?
What are they going to roll out as a benefit?
ESPP.
Okay, an ESOP. Okay, let's talk about ESOPs then. And for everybody else, Lucy, ESOPs are, the company sells you their shares. They allow you to buy their shares at a discount. Did they tell you, Lucy, how much of a discount they'll let you buy the company shares?
15%.
Okay, that's fairly common. A 15% discount. This is the benefit is you're getting the stock cheap. You're getting it for 15% off of what it's selling for out in the marketplace. And Lucy, of course, it can go up and down in value just like any stock, right? Goes up and down in value.
Right.
The danger is if you buy the stock, and usually there's a holding period. Did they tell you that you have to hold on to it for a certain length of time?
They haven't tell us the policy yet.
Okay. Well, the danger is sometimes they tell you, sometimes they tell you you can sell it, you can buy it today and sell it tomorrow. Some companies will allow you to do that. But many of them tell you, want you to hold on to the stock, so they have a holding period. You got to hold on to it for 6 months. Well, what if it goes down 30% in 6 months? So there's your danger, Lucy. You're locked into it for a certain period of time. So find out if there's a lockup period whenever you buy your ESOP. Okay.
Okay.
Remember, when you're getting a 15% discount, you got to think about your tax consequences on that situation. Because when you sell it, you got it at a certain price, and then you still have your capital gains tax. You got to consider short term versus long term and all that stuff. And another danger is don't get too much of your own company stock, of your overall portfolio or your wealth. You don't want it to dominate your wealth. So be careful of that too. That's another danger. Those are basically the dangers.
Okay.
If it's a good, solid company, it's a great benefit. It really is. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Lucy. Call me up with details, and you know, if you have any questions about it, just let me know. Send me an email. I'll help you answer the questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy. Okay. Appreciate it. Yeah, so your biggest danger is lockup periods and getting too much of it. And if it's a weak company, you don't even want the stock. You know, the benefit is not as great as you might think. So you got to make sure you all those things are considered. Cash is no longer king. And what I mean is $23.2 trillion in the world is credit card or debit card use, not using cash. And 22.6 is cash. So it's the first time more credit card and debit cards are used than cash in transactions. This is worldwide. First time ever this year this has happened. Cash still makes up, though, 85% of all transactions, mostly because of the small transactions, meaning buying and selling stuff. So cash is king on the small transaction basis. But think about your use of credit cards and debit cards. Now, what's the danger here? Well, cash danger used to be counterfeiting the American dollars or counterfeiting the currency. That's still a problem. But now the danger is hackers, isn't it? Hackers are getting more aggressive, more widespread. All your information is out there. And it's getting more and more dangerous to do your credit card and debit card transactions over the internet. So it's more and more dangerous. But still, I don't see how this trend is going to end. I think it's going to just continue. It's just more convenience. And I can see that there's ways to make it more and more secure. And that, of course, they're always working on that to try to make it more and more secure. But they're going to have to. They have to stay ahead of the criminals. Tops on our list of priorities is your call, as you know. So bring your questions anytime. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve. This is Don from College Station. I'm interested in some high-paying dividend stocks, specifically Johnson & Johnson and 3M. But unfortunately, their PE is very high at this time. What do you recommend doing, and what would you consider a good buy point on both of those stocks? Thanks. Bye.
Well, let's take a look at Johnson & Johnson. I mean, you know, 3M is also a good company, but let's start with Johnson & Johnson. J&J is the symbol. Develops healthcare products. And one of the things I like about Johnson & Johnson is it's so broad-based. Okay, consumer products, pharmaceuticals, and the medical market, and they're non-cyclical kind of products, needing the economic cycle. If it goes down, they'll still sell. Now, they consistently grow their earnings, and recently they've been pretty consistent about growing sales, sold in single digits because we're talking about a $316 million company. So the stock has pulled down to the 200-day moving average, which is like $112, $113, and then bounced in the last couple of days from there to $115. So that's a good sign to me. So a 2.8% dividend, a good return on equity. So, you know, Johnson & Johnson might be a good place to buy, but you're right. The PE, even at this place to buy, is 17, and the five-year range is 12 to 19. So it's not cheap. Now, what would be cheap when it gets down to in the low 90s? That would be cheap. Now, on 3M, MMM is its symbol, 3Ms, they're more of a, it provides industrial tapes, it adheses, medical supplies, office products, surveillance and communication products. Also a very strong company, $100 billion size. No growth, just kind of flat sales, shrinking sales the last year or two, but small. But income is growing. That means they must be cutting expenses. And if you look at 3M, they did the same kind of thing. They broke below their 200-day moving average a little bit. And so I would say that 3M doesn't look as strong. Their PE average is like 21. And the five-year range is 13 to 23. There's no contest in my mind. You buy Johnson & Johnson, not 3M. Remember, Johnson & Johnson is growing their sales, not greatly, but are growing, and growing their earnings per share, whereas 3M is growing its earnings per share, but not its sales. And 3M's at 21 PE, where Johnson & Johnson, which is at it near its high for the five-year range. And both of them are not cheap, but Johnson & Johnson looks better to me. Not cheap, either one, as you point out. So you're buying at a price that you might regret. Be patient. Wait till it pulls back. Maybe you'll get a pullback soon. Maybe not. I don't know. But, you know, the market's way overdue for a pullback. I can tell you that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're now going to go talk to Nick in Hayward. How you doing, Nick?
Yeah, hi, Steve. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. The other day, I had a discussion with my friend. Mm-hmm. Someone had passed away, and they had a just regular will.
Yes.
So I was telling him, if there's a will, does it have to go to probate? And he says, yeah, I still have to go through probate. Can you tell me something about it?
Yes, you still have to go through probate, even with a will. I'm not an expert in this area, but, you know, you have an executor of the will. You know, who the will name an executor. The only way you can really avoid probate is if you have a trust. And therefore,
right.
The trust
oh.
will avoid probate. Okay?
Uh-huh.
But if you have a will, uh-huh. just plain will just gives directions of who gets what. And someone is executing that, called an executor. I've been an executor twice now. My brother died and my parents died. As an executor, you know, I had to go through probate one time here in California, one time in Arizona. And you, as the executive, you just follow the rules and dictates of the will, and you should be fine. You give everybody a copy of the will that has anything to do with the will, and you just follow its dictates, and you should be fine. But you do have to go through probate with the will, yes.
Oh, but there was no executor named here.
Okay, so then the state will pick an executor. If there's no executor named in the will, the state will pick the executor, and and that executor will probably be a law firm, and they'll charge you, I think it's 2% of the estate or something. There's a figure that they charge. So if it's a $100,000 estate, they get $2,000,
right.
You know. I don't remember exactly the amount, but it's like that amount, somewhere in that range. And that's
so, what I hear from you is have a trust, right?
A trust will be much easier, and you can avoid probate if you have all the mm-hmm. things that are mm-hmm. valuable named in the trust. And I like avoiding probate. Probate just prolongs the process.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Steve, very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
the call. Yeah, and the only reason I know a little bit about everybody is because I had to go through it twice. You know, and of course, laws change, and you need to talk to an attorney, and all those wonderful things. Don't just believe me what I say. I'm not the expert on that, but that's how it worked out for me. Now, on the first day of November 1st, I will be in San Ramon for individual retirement reviews. It's a good time to get that accomplished before the holidays set in, everybody. These time slots fill up pretty fast, so if you would like to meet with me on November 1st in San Ramon, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab, then portfolio review.
Would you like to see a webinar on the new America? There's more manufacturing than you might think. High-tech plants opening in Kentucky. It all spells opportunity for investors. Broaden your knowledge. Become an Invest Talk insider. It's free. Sign up yourself on investtalk.com. Just click on the Invest Talk tab.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Do you know that Tesla made money in the third quarter? You do know that their gigabyte battery factory is opening in what? I know that it's not too far down the road, and this factory's in Nevada. making batteries. It's in Nevada. How come it's not in Mexico or China or something? Why did they decide to do it here? So don't think that all manufacturing is taking place outside the United States. No, that's not true. That's not true. Now, I will say this. A lot of jobs did leave here, but not all. Anyways, Tesla announced Q3 earnings and were positive. Second quarter in their history where they had made money. But really, did they make money really? And the answer is probably not. Because remember their Model 3 that's coming out and they're trying to roll it out? That's the Model 3 is the less expensive version of their Model, 6? And the Model X is the kind of SUV-looking one. Remember that? So in 2017, next year, they're going to have to produce a lot of cash. And the estimate is about $1.7 billion to finish out the rollout the Model 3. Of course, that means not making money. Now, you have to give them credit. They delivered 24,500 cars in Q3 this year. That was 111% more this quarter, the Q3, than a year ago quarter. So they're doing very well. Very well. On the other hand, they're buying Solar City, which makes, in most analysts' eyes, and mine too, I must say, I'm not an analyst, but in my eyes, makes no sense. Makes no sense. Of course, Musk is a genius, and I'll give him that. So maybe he's got his, he says there's synergies there. Well, what, you could put a solar panel on top of the SUV, a solar panel on the car to generate electricity? Is that your synergy? That's not going to save Solar City. There's not enough cars you can make to give them enough panels to have that happen. So I'm not sure where the synergy comes from. I'm just not getting it. So because Solar City was going bankrupt. It needs $1.7 billion to keep going. So, you know, did Tesla really make money? Well, if the Solar City deal goes through, it hasn't gone through yet. And we do know they need to borrow big bucks to finish out their Model 3, which, you know, that's okay. You know, starting a big company, you're going to have costs. I understand that. But did they actually make money? Well, you know, they're going to show not making money in the next few years because of the new models. That's a problem. Not making money is a problem. How much will you accept? How much will the average investor accept in debt losses before they decide that Tesla's not worth $200 a share? Yeah, with no earnings. That's the problem. What is it really worth? Now, experts, I've seen experts range from like $150 to $350 a share. But those estimates, those analysts, yeah, they don't know. Just rolling the dice. You're listening to Invest Talk. Now you have a partner in managing your 401k at work. It's a new program from us, KPP Financial, called My 401k. Find out more about it on investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab and then My 401k.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. Thank you both for a great show. I'd like to ask an unusual question regarding the best way to purchase bonds. I've always purchased equities, mutual funds, and bond funds using online via Fidelity or Vanguard. I'm in my 60s, and I want to begin to reduce risk and buy short-term, triple B or better corporate bonds from large, well-capitalized companies in a laddered approach. Is using the online tools Fidelity and Vanguard an appropriate way of buying bonds, or should I use a different method? To be competitive and to be cute about it, I was going to open both programs simultaneously and price the similar bonds or the same bonds and buy it from the cheaper company. Looking forward to your response. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Yeah, bonds are a little more difficult than stocks. There's work involved with them. When I say work, it means you have to understand the underlying fundamentals of the company that you're buying. He's buying corporate bonds for corporations. You know, the quality of the bond, I'm not so keen on, you know, necessarily just basing the decision solely on the quality of the bond, but I do like investment grade or better, meaning high quality. And buying them is different because there's bond dealers out there, bond desks. And we buy through the bond desk that we have developed a relationship with because they're the ones that get the best bonds. The bond market is not nearly as transparent as the stock market. And when you're using, like you're suggesting you're going to buy, use two desks and see which one offers you the best deal, you're going to find that you're going to get different deals from different desks. And if you don't, if you had a lot of money in bonds, millions of dollars buying bonds, $1 million at a time, you'll get better deals. And when you're only buying $10,000 or $20,000 worth of a corporate bond, they don't really want to deal with you. You're too small potatoes. It's a difficult area. But the way you really want to do it is develop a relationship with a bond dealer. And the only way to do that is if you have enough money to make it worth his while. They make very, very small commissions on these bonds. So, yeah, and they're the ones, you got to go out and find the bonds. You know, once you see them on these desks, they've already been offered to all the institutions, everybody else, and what's left is what's left. And what do you think is left? You think the best deals are left? No. That's not what's left. Not the best deals. So it's a difficult area, you know, for people to get into because it's not like you can go out and say, well, what's the stock selling at? And who, what's the bid and what's the offer? You know, it's not that simple, unfortunately. Let's talk about more bonds and more. How about 10-year Treasury bonds? You know they are at the highest yield since June, meaning rates, interest rates gone up. So that means the value of those Treasury bonds have gone down. Why did that happen? Because it's a worldwide phenomenon, not just here in the U.S., it's everywhere. Why is that happening? It's a very simple explanation here. It's very simple. And you've heard me talk about it in the last couple of weeks that it seems like investors worldwide are figuring out, coming to the conclusions that the central banks worldwide have finally come to their senses thinking, well, maybe this QE, this quantitative easing, this making money really, you know, printing a lot of money is not working. It's not boosting economies. So the investors are thinking, maybe central banks are going to turn away from QE, which I think is true, and interest rates actually are going to start rising. We better get ready for that. If you notice, there's still pretty good demand for short-term U.S. bonds, but the long-terms are moving up. Yields are moving up. Values are going down. Fed hasn't done anything. Of course, you know the Fed's going to probably raise rate in December. That could be another part of it. But I think it's more of a groundswell worldwide phenomena of central banks, Bank of Japan, the United Kingdom, the Draghi, or whatever his name is, the ECB bank. They all appear to be now talking about, thinking about doing something different or stopping their QE. And that will mean interest rates will rise. Now, it's going to be slow. Don't think of anything fast. Our time's up for this hour. Remember to save the day for our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference coming up on November 12th. If you sign up by midnight November 5th and take $10 off, you can take $10 off the $45 ticket price. You can sign up online on investtalk.com. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and I am president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody else at KPP, I thank you for listening today. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing.
Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.